Hello and welcome to Meet the Writers. I'm Georgina Godwin. My guest today is a Thai writer, filmmaker, artist, graphic designer, magazine editor, screenwriter, and translator. His work includes over 20 books of fiction and non-fiction, and the design for over 100 book covers. He's a contributor to Words Without Borders, promoting cultural understanding through the translation of international authors to an English-speaking audience. He's considered by many as the voice of a new generation of Thais that grew up in a fast urbanizing country, and a writer who popularized postmodern narrative techniques and made them a mainstay in contemporary Thai literature. Prabdayun, welcome to Meet the Writers.
Thank you.
You were born in Thailand, but then you moved to America. Tell me how that worked. Why did you go and how old were you?
I was born in Thailand and I lived there until about 14 or 15. And I had just finished elementary school in Thailand. And then my sister and I went to the States to study in high school, basically because our parents sent us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Why is that? Was the education in Thailand not brilliant?
This is quite usual for people who can afford it to send their children abroad. The States is popular. The UK is actually very popular for Thai people to come. And yes, because of that reason. Mm-hmm. And I think because in my family, my parents are in journalism and my father is an editor of an English newspaper. So he, I guess, thinking ahead, wanting me and my sister to know, to be fluent in English.
But you had those formative years at home in Bangkok. What was it like? Because I'm thinking we're talking about the 80s, really, aren't we?
Yeah.
And so that was a time of really quite big change in Thailand.
Yeah, but of course, being a child, I mean, I didn't realize anything at the time. But yes, it was, Thai society was changing. A lot of Western influences as well as Japanese influences. I grew up reading Japanese manga, watching American films. Yeah, reading a lot of translations as well from the West.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then went off to America, where, of course, suddenly your world is totally in English. Was that difficult?
Very difficult at first. English education in Thailand is not strong. So even though we start very young, we can't use it really in day-to-day basis. But it didn't take that long for me to feel comfortable in the States. Maybe a year or two, I could start to communicate.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. So you finished high school there, but then you went on to art college?
Yes, in New York.
Why?
Because I was interested in art. And I think that was also one of the reasons why my parents thought it would be a better idea to send me to the States or out of Thailand. Because I showed interest in art very early. And in Thailand, people sort of frown upon children who are interested in artistic, you know, practices because they put more value into subjects like math and science and or wanting children to become doctors and, you know, things like that. So people who are interested in the arts are often put into classes that are considered sort of weak teenagers.
Right.
And a lot of people, unfortunately, because they see themselves that way because the adults tell them that they're that way, they turn to, you know, drugs or they misbehave because they feel like that's what they're supposed to do.
They're outcasts.
Yeah.
So what kind of art did you study?
I started with graphic design and then I changed to fine arts.
Mm-hmm. And were you writing at that time?
I was writing before I left Thailand. I started to write short stories when I was about 12, 13. But while in the States, I did write a little bit, but just for my own enjoyment, I didn't send it out. When I was 12, I sent my stories out to magazines, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But in the States, I wrote when I missed writing. So,
why did you go back to Thailand?
Because in Thailand, there is military service that is mandatory. And you can postpone it until you're 26. And I graduated from college at 25 and a half or something like that. And I stayed on in New York for 6 months or so. And then I had to go back.
Or never go back again, I guess.
Or yeah, or marry somebody. It didn't seem like a right time to do that. So.
And how was the army?
It was not so bad. I mean, I expected so much worse. But it was a fascinating experience to know that lifestyle or you know, the ways that people in the army lived day to day. But it was also boring because for boot camp, you just basically don't do much. You wake up very early to exercise, and then you have a lot of free time. And for some reason, they don't allow books and writing.
That's so crazy.
Yeah. So during the free time, it's just like sitting around talking to your peers, basically.
Yeah. And you didn't find just as a sort of free creative spirit, you didn't find the discipline crushing?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was really, I don't think I could take it so much longer than that. But for somebody who had just, you know, done it for the first time, I was also fascinated by the environment and the people that I met. Because people who go to the army, I mean, for boot camp, they're from all over the place. You know, it's like all types of people from all classes. And yeah. So it's a good experience in that way. I mean,
what did you do after the army then?
I started to write a little bit. I wrote film criticism. And I did many different things, like website design, and I wrote a script for a television series and things like that. So it was a lot of, you know, this and that to find my way, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And how did you find your way then in the end?
It came about quite accidentally. I started to write again because I missed it and because it felt like something natural for me to continue after 11 years of being away, to go back to, you know, what I was doing before that. So I started to write short stories and send them out to magazines that accepted short stories, which were very few. And one of them accepted all my stories. So I had a kind of a really, almost like a column of short story in that one magazine, which was very popular among young people. And they also had a publishing house, and they asked to publish a collection of my short stories. So I didn't really expect to become a professional writer, but because that was something solid that came before everything else. I mean, I'd just been back in Thailand for only 2 or 3 years, and I already had one book published. So it was, you know,
to huge acclaim and prizes and, I mean, absolutely hailed as the new modern voice of Thailand.
Yeah. And I don't know, unfortunately, maybe.
Well, it's quite a responsibility, though, isn't it? Being sort of the flag bearer for a generation of young Thai writers. Is that what it felt like?
It felt a little bit strange because I never thought of my work as like in that league. I was writing for fun, and my influences were mostly quite comical sort of literature and a lot of silly word plays and things like that. But I also was interested in modernist literature. So I think that was that combination. But when I was writing, I never thought, you know, like I aim to become a serious literary person. You know? Mm-hmm. So it was kind of interesting and shocking in a way.
It's interesting that you use the word modernist literature because your certainly your most recent book is described as a collection of postmodern stories.
Yeah. And in Thailand as well. I mean, I was sort of labeled as the postmodernist writer or somebody who popularized modernist writing in Thailand, which is, I don't know, I don't agree with it, but... I don't know. Who am I to say?
Well, let's just talk a little bit about your style, because again, people have analysed you again and again. You're such an interesting writer, and there's been so much written about you. Some of the words that come up, people often say that you're strongly influenced by pop culture and science fiction, that you experiment with punctuation and grammar. A lot of your stories have a metafictional twist, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. And a reflection, a contemplation of Bangkok life, really. So I wondered if you'd describe your own style in your own words, because that's just a mixture of what people say.
There's certainly interest in experimentation. My background really is in art. So when I was studying art, I was very interested in eras of artistic movements like Dada, you know, the early modernist paintings and abstraction, things like that. So I would say my work is influenced by that type of art, but in a playful way. I would call my work, you know, playful, a modernist writing.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe because I'm also interested in philosophy. So there is that sort of combination of playfulness and philosophical contemplation, you know, yeah.
There's a lot of wordplay, and you usually write in Thai.
Yeah.
And I wonder how that works in translation, because often I imagine there aren't the words that directly correlate to what you're saying.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's very hard. And that's why I never thought that my stories could be translated, really, or at least by other people apart from myself, because a lot of Thai words are so inviting to be played with, you know. The Thai language is very very lyrical, poetical, and it has a kind of fluid sense. Like, you don't have to stick with anything in particular in order to communicate. I mean, you only need a couple of words that make sense to tell people what you're trying to say, but the rest you can sort of add up, you know, different things, or just sounds.
Uh-huh.
And in Thai, I like that fluidity of the language. And so I play with it a lot in the beginning of my writing career. I would make up words. I would use words incorrectly. But, you know, from also kind of in a naive kind of approach as well, because I had been away for so long and I didn't use Thai for a long time. When I went back, I was kind of like a 13-year-old Thai person trapped in a 26-year-old man, you know. So I was writing in with the kind of excitement of somebody who was going back to the language that I'd been away from and having fun with it.
Why write in Thai?
Why? Because, I don't know, I'm most confident in Thai, I would say. When I was younger, I was also writing a lot of poetry in Thai. And Thai poetry is a lot of fun, because you can, as I said, like make words up or switch words around and things like that. And it's almost like writing songs. So I was still attracted to that quality. And it just felt natural.
And yet, as you say, very difficult to translate it literally into English.
Right.
Why then allow other people to do it?
Because, well, in this case, Mui, my translator, she seemed very dedicated to the project. And it was like her own work, you know. I didn't really have much expectation, to be honest. I mean, she wrote to me that she was doing her degree in translation and she wanted to translate my stories. And I felt like, well, you know, that was something for her work. And I felt like, why not, you know? I didn't have anything to lose by that. And but I didn't think that it would become this book at all.
Because, of course, you're a translator yourself. Mm-hmm. I mean, the list of things you've translated is incredibly impressive. Mm-hmm. Most people haven't even read these books, let alone translated them. I mean, huge modern Western classics, Nabokov's Lolita, all of J.D. Salinger, Anthony Burgess's A Clockwork Orange. I mean, the list goes on and on. It's quite impressive. So are all of those published?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
in Thai?
I just finished, before I came to London, Pnin by Nabokov. So, yeah,
quite
yeah.
Quite extraordinary. Mm. And how easy is it then to translate those back into your own language? If there's a problem with Thai going to English, is it the same thing exists the other way?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's very difficult to translate Nabokov. Lolita was very painful for me to do. But it was also a great learning experience because it was almost like taking a class with this writer that I was translating. With Salinger as well, but Salinger is, I think, more dated in a way. And it's also, he used a lot of American slangs in the 50s and 60s. So it's difficult to, well, it's not difficult, but you have to make a choice. When you translate it to Thai, you have to, you know, I mean, in Thai, there's, of course, in the 50s and 60s in Thailand, probably people also had slangs that are different from now. Mm. But you have to make a choice whether to make, to update it to, you know, contemporary readers or to try to mimic the original text. And I went with contemporary readers because I feel like art or literature should not be dated by, you know, their time frame.
Mm. And it's also a question, I suppose, of going for the absolute literal translation or the spirit of the thing.
I go for the spirit.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you can't, I mean, for example, Nabokov, you can't translate everything exactly or correctly because there's just so many words that we don't have in Thai, you know. Yeah, so it's you have to make a choice.
Mm. I mean, your latest book has come out in conjunction with Penn and their whole translation program. And I know that you're very involved with Words Without Borders. So very much the kind of the cutting edge of cross-cultural translation pollination, if you like. Is that something that, I mean, that the whole Penn connection and Words Without Borders, do you see that as a political act?
That's interesting. No, not directly, I would say, but because in Thailand we're having a lot of political problems now. I would be glad if it was seen as a political act and that it would make outsiders become more interested in the situations in Thailand or to learn more about Thai culture. Mm. But it, on my part, it's not intentional, you know. I mean, and I didn't. All this came about without my doing, really. It came through my translator, my publisher, or just interest in Thailand in general from other countries. Mm. Probably also because in recent years there have been news about Thailand that are absurd. You know, it's just strange stories from Thailand. And perhaps people are, you know, curious about what's going on there.
Do you think that the political upheavals that you refer to affect your writing? Do they constrain you in any way? Do you feel you can always write what you want?
I still can write what I want, but I mean, as long as what I write doesn't address directly the taboo subjects that are often censored or, you know, or would get me in trouble if I were to write about them. Mm. It's challenging because as a writer and somebody who's, I mean, I consider myself a liberal, to live in such a conservative society, and there's not, liberalism is not officially accepted in Thai culture. So is when you voice against the norm, I mean, it's quite challenging and it can be dangerous sometimes. But, you know, I'm not a political writer in the sense that I don't address these issues directly in my work. But it's challenging in a way, you know, because everything is so absurd now. And reasons that are given to the people through military government, I mean, it's just all propaganda, and it's almost like 1984 in the sense of, you know, we have probably similar in the States, where there is words like alternative facts and things like that, and fake news and things like that. So we are experiencing that in Thailand as well, just in a different, you know, environment. Mm. But it's challenging because as a writer, you have to wonder what you can express to confront this issue.
Yeah. I mean, because your book does give a wonderful snapshot of, of particularly of Bangkok. I wonder how much that's reflected in the writings of other Thais. I mean, if you had to talk about the major themes coming out in Thai writing, what would those be?
I think it depends also where you, where you're from. In Thailand, if you live in Bangkok like myself and you're a writer, the writing tends to be quite cosmopolitan and about city life, about trends that are global. People use a lot of Facebook in Thailand, and they follow a lot of international pages and news organizations and things like that. So writing in Bangkok feels almost very, very international, very up-to-date with the world, you know. And it's not particularly Thai. I mean, unless it's about some particular social concern or political situations. But if you live in the northeastern part of Thailand, for example, life is very different and they're affected by politics differently as well. So the writers there tend to be more political and to reflect what's going on politically in the country, more so than people living in Bangkok.
Is it quite a vibrant publishing scene? I mean, are there a lot of authors and do they sell well?
They don't sell well, but it's vibrant in the sense that we now have many independent presses, I think maybe similar to here in the UK as well, and serious, so-called serious readers and writers pay a lot of attention to these trends, these independent presses, independent bookshops, but numbers of copies not very high, you know. So
not a great reading public?
I would say Thai people read a lot, but they read not serious literature, I would say.
What are they reading?
A lot of romances do very well, like self-help books. Books on business, how to get ahead in business and things like that. Yeah.
Can we turn now to your latest book that's just been published and it's just come out in early March, and it's a wonderful book. It's called The Sad Part Was, and it's a collection of short stories. Again, that word postmodern comes up again when it's being described. It's published here in Britain by Titled Access Press in translation, as you said, but not by you. I wanted to talk a little bit about the first story, Pen in Parenthesis, because that seems to me very autobiographical.
Yes.
About a man working in advertising, talking about his grandparents. The whole sort of advertising, the description of the job in advertising is so fabulous. And just the kind of thought going on about who he's going to cast in the advert, and does that mean that he'll get to hang out with a pretty starlet and all the rest of it. Such a great piece of work. Is it you?
It's based on myself, yes, but it's not all me. I never really had to go into advertising. But it was something, I mean, advertising is something that is sort of almost expected to be where people who study art end up, you know, in Thailand. Because to be a fine artist or something, it's just unheard of. So if I were to stay in Thailand and study art there, I would probably end up like this character. But I was also, I had these thoughts when I graduated in New York as well, because I knew I had to come back to Thailand, and I was, you know, kind of lost. I didn't know what kind of work I would be doing there. Then everything that I used to think about when I was in Thailand came back, you know. Then I had to worry about, you know, like, no, now I'm going to have to be in advertising. It's something that I really despise. Yeah. So, yeah, all these, the thoughts of the character in the story pretty much came from myself.
I want to turn to another story. And this is one that's been picked up by almost everybody that's read the book because of its kind of sort of, I suppose, metafictional quality.
Right.
It's called Marriage by the Sea. And, of course, it addresses an author, and that author is you. So I wondered if you would just read us a little bit from it, just so that listeners get an idea of how very, very clever this is, and how, in fact, by you reading it, it becomes kind of meta-meta.
Okay. All right. How do I know Prabda is stupid? Of course I know. I've known him since his brain was just developing. Did you know that Prabhupada likes to tell anyone who listen what a passionate devotee of literature he is? But does anyone know how many books he's actually finished reading? Oh, the number isn't that high in the double digits. The ones he really remembers are even fewer. He might talk the talk, like he knows a whole slew of important works. In all seriousness, if you made him take an exam to test his knowledge of the world's influential literature, he might be able to answer two or three questions tops. The rest would be pure waffle. Just as he's waffled his way through life since he was a kid, he might be able to name-check plenty of authors, especially those whose books are known to be difficult. Why? Because he knows that the more challenging the book, the fewer the people who've made it through it. It's a crafty strategy to cover up his ignorance. This is a sad fact that he has to face and accept before he can hunger down and create more work.
And this is written by a character that you've created.
Yeah.
Who's basically waiting for the plot to
The story to happen. Yeah.
It's a wonderful, wonderful piece of work, and it makes part of this wonderful book, The Sad Part Was. Mm. It's out now and it's published by Tilted Axe. It's the winner of the English Pen Award. Mm. And it's a completely fabulous book. Quickly before you go, what are you working on now?
I'm working on a novel, hopefully.
Can you tell us any more about it?
Yeah, I mean, it's at a very early stage now, but most likely it will be a story that takes place entirely in a basement bar in Bangkok. And it's a kind of fantasy, maybe a dystopian fantasy, if you will.
Prabhupada Yoon, thank you for coming on to Meet the Writers.
Thank you very much.
The Sad Part Was by Prabhupada Yoon, translated by Mui Pupok Sakul, is published by Tilted Access Press. It's out now. You've been listening to Meet the Writers, thanks to the producer Claire Urban. You can download this show and previous episodes from our website or app, from SoundCloud, MixCloud, or iTunes. I'm Georgina Godwin. Thank you for listening.